You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And so glad to have you with us. It is it's amazing what's going on in this country right now. Between Grover Norquist being the 13th member of the Supercommittee, between this new report, actually, you know, I think one of the most important things in the news today is one of the unreported things in the news today. You pretty much won't find this in the corporate media because the corporate media is owned by the companies that are doing this. And, you know, I mean, just go right down the list, right? Every one of the big television networks is basically owned by a transnational corporation that has offshore subsidiaries as tax shelters and that sends jobs overseas. This came out of the Commerce Department. Over the last decade, transnational corporations operating out of the United States, this would be like, you know, like General Electric or, you know, Exxon Mobil, fill in the blank. We all know their names. Transnational corporations based in the United States laid off 864,000 American workers. Now, does that mean that they're getting smaller in terms of their workforce? No, not so much. They actually hired 1.5 million people in Asia. They hired 500,000 new people, 500,000 new people in Latin America. But they laid off 864,000 American workers. These are the same companies that are sitting on trillions of dollars offshore. That the Republicans are saying, you know, if these companies bring this money back, it's going to be taxed at the 35% corporate tax rate. And actually, a lot of it won't be anything close to that because there are a zillion, you know, exemptions and loopholes and this, that, and the other thing. But let's give them a tax holiday. Let's bring it back at zero. Let's bring it back at 5%. Let's bring it back at 8%. We tried this once before. I think it was in 2003, 2004. Anyhow, we tried this once before. And what happened? The companies brought back trillions of dollars, and they used the money to buy back their own stock. Why would they buy back their own stock? So that they can use it to reimburse their senior executives and their CEOs instead of cash. Because the IRS tax code says that after you pay somebody $1 million in income, up to that $1 million, the corporation can take that as a tax deduction. But after that, they can't. But if you give them stock, there's no tax on that. That's not a taxable event to the company. So this is like, you know, the new hustle. This is why people like, you know, Stephen J. Hemsley and the head of United Healthcare, he might make $100 million in a year. His salary's only $2 or $3 million. The rest of it is stock options, stock, basically, stock that, you know, within a year or two or whatever the period of time associated with the option, he can redeem, he can cash in. These companies cut their investments in the United States over the last decade. These transnational corporations cut their investments in the United States, increased their investments in overseas countries 4%. They're doing business. What we're looking at is the end result here in the United States of 30 years of Reaganomics, Clintonomics, Bushonomics, destroy the economy, move all the money up to the top 1%. And it's very straightforward. Tax cuts, deregulation, and so-called free trade. It is exactly what Ross Perot warned about back in 96, whichever election that was. I think it was the election in 92 when he was running against Bill Clinton and George Herbert Walker Bush. And here is what he had to say.
And you can move your factory south of the border, pay $1 an hour for labor, hire a young 25. That's assuming you've been in business for a long time. You've got a mature workforce. Pay $1 an hour for your labor. Have no health care. That's the most expensive single element, making a car. Have no environmental controls, no pollution controls, and no retirement. And you don't care about anything but making money. There will be a giant sucking sound going south.
I was listening to National Petroleum Radio the other day, and they had this whole piece about these maquiladora factories, how these companies are setting up these factories just south of the border in Mexico because labor there is $10 a day. Not $10 an hour, $10 a day. And they're able to ship across the border really super fast. They got to deal with customs. Everybody knows who they are. They don't have to super inspect the trucks. And now the trucks can even drive deep into the United States and all this stuff. And isn't it wonderful, basically? I mean, it was how it was presented. Look at these companies. They're getting so much more efficient. Right. No American jobs. Right. I mean, this is what 30 years of Reaganomics, Bushonomics, and Clintonomics, so-called global free trade, tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires, dropping the top tax rate from 74% down to 28%. This is what, and then dropping the capital gains tax rate, the capitalist income tax, the capitalist gain income tax. In other words, the income tax that you pay if you are a capitalist, if you make your money with capital. A capitalist is a person who doesn't earn their money by working. They earn their money by moving money around, by typically loaning money out or investing money. And then when those investments come back or those loans come back, that's their income. And capitalists pay a different tax rate in the United States than you and me. This started with President Harding, the Republican who was elected in the election of 1920. Up until that time, the capitalist tax rate and the worker tax rate had been identical. In fact, it was 67%, as I recall, when Harding came into office. And what he did was he said, you know, let's keep the worker tax rate where it is for now. And he eventually dropped that, but not as much as the capitalist tax rate. But let's drop the income tax on the capitalists. Let's create this new category called capital gains. And the capitalist tax rate, you know, this is the irony. You know, the only president since Harding did that in 1921, the only president who has said the capitalist tax rate should be the same as the worker tax rate and put them both at the same level at 28% was Ronald Reagan. Make the capitalist pay the same as the workers. Didn't last very long. By 86, he'd you know, done away with that. But this is amazing. So this study just came out from the Commerce Department. 864,000 American workers laid off by transnational corporations based in the United States, while at the same time they hired over 2 million people in Asia and Latin America. Meanwhile, yesterday the president came out and said, you know, now that the super committee, the gang of 12, has failed, thank goodness. Right? Government by gangs is insane. It is absolutely not what the founders of this country envisioned. And now that the gang of 12 has collapsed, the president came out and he said, clip number one, Jacob, here's what he had to say.
Already some in Congress are trying to undo these automatic spending cuts. My message to them is simple. No, I will veto any effort to get rid of those automatic spending cuts to domestic and defense spending. There will be no easy off-ramps on this one.
That's very interesting, because already the drumbeat has begun. Oh my goodness, they're going to cut our defense. They're going to leave our troops defenseless. It's actually a tiny cut. You know, our defense budget has doubled, basically, since George Bush came into office. And this scales it back, you know, a couple of points. Oh, and the young woman who was pregnant in Seattle, 3 months pregnant, and was saying to the police officers as she was trying to get out, she's like, I'm trying to get away, as the police swept in to occupy Seattle. She was like, I'm trying to get out, I'm pregnant. And two different police officers beat her in the stomach and then pepper sprayed her. She just miscarried. More on that right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program,
which points out why it's so important for Occupy Wall Street to remain leaderless. I'll explain right after the break. Well, speaking of Panama, by the way, I said just before the break that I would tell you why I think that it's so important that Occupy Wall Street stay leaderless. The news came out this week that a lobbying firm has, or a PR firm rather, has for the sweet sum of $850,000 offered to do opposition research on any leaders or people within the movement of Occupy Wall Street in order to discredit them, to plant bad stories about them in the press. Yeah, seriously. And so as long as it's not a leader, there's like nobody they can pick on, right? Which seems to me like a reasonable thing and, you know, a pretty good idea. So anyhow. Panama is on the line with us. Panama is an Occupy Wall Street participant, marched from New York to Occupy D.C. to join with Occupy D.C. OccupyTheHighway.org is the website for this expedition. And Panama, hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, how you doing?
Just great. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear what you said, Luis. It's something about Zuccotti. Are you in Zuccotti?
Yes, came from Zuccotti and one of the drummers for Pulse and started walking down with the movement and been together ever since.
Oh, that's great. So you were a member of the Zuccotti Park and now you're here in Washington, D.C. So how was the trip? How was the march?
The march was very positive, a lot of positive feedback from the communities, which we usually don't receive when we're in Zuccotti Park because we're kind of segregated from Main Street America because we're in Wall Street.
Yeah.
So seeing the support from people in Main Street America really was very powerful and supporting.
And now that you're in D.C., I know that there's a presidential debate here tonight. I you know, plans to occupy that. Plans. You know, what's going on here in D.C. or what's up?
The vibe in D.C. is great. We've been walking around today, getting ready for the events of the day, and we have nothing but positive support from the people of Washington D.C. especially. And they also seem to have the same grievances as people in small towns such as Jessup, Maryland, or even bigger towns like Baltimore. The
yeah.
same grievances are shared. We need jobs. We need proper representation in government. And also that community action is necessary to halt this corporate greed.
Yeah. And if I may, I would add corporations are not people and money is not speech, but that's my thing. Not Panama, the when originally we had, you know, folks on from, you know, who were participating in this march from Zuccotti Park up here to Washington, D.C. Part of the frame was that they were going to arrive on or around the time that the super committee was supposed to make a suggestion to Congress about here's how, you know, what we want to cut and, you know, austerity, let's shrink the shrink the government, let's make the recession even deeper and even worse and throw more people out of work, that kind of stuff. You hit the timeline, but to the super committee, kind of anticlimactic. Are you still trying to draw a connection between those two, or has the march become a thing in and of itself?
The march has taken on a body in and of itself, definitely. Because throughout the march, we've come across people who weren't familiar with the super committee. However, we came across people who have the similar grievances, if you will, economic inequalities in America, and the policies in D.C. need to change. So that hasn't changed because the policies in D.C. affect Wall Street, and this will also affect change in Main Street America, and that will benefit all of us as a population.
So what's next for you, Panama, and what do you see ahead with all the raids on Zuccotti?
Sorry, what was that?
What's next for you personally, and the other people who are in the march, and what do you see ahead with all the raids going on back down in New York at Zuccotti Park?
What's taking place at Zuccotti Park, the raid has actually, in many people's perception, been a godsend, if you will. In terms of that, Zuccotti Park was a petri dish, if you will, and something was growing there, which is the Occupy movement. Well, they shattered that petri dish, and now the cells and the germs and all of that have now spread into the common community, such as us being from Zuccotti, walking through small towns in Maryland, in Pennsylvania, in New Jersey, in Delaware, and we're spreading this Occupy movement. Because the perception that it seemed like was a bunch of people in tents, not showering, and just having fun. But that's not true. Because it's not fun to walk 240 miles. I don't know about other people. But that is what it is now. And
yeah.
Also, what is next is we've come up with this thing that occupy a hotel. Because so many people have been in situations where they don't want to come to a park. that has a perception of being, I say, not low light, but a perception of being dirty, a perception of not wanting to be associated with the park due to the homeless population, due to the sanity, the sanitation issues, due to the also the ability of safety to bring your family, to bring your coworkers to a place. So occupying hotels in that to get conference rooms, meeting rooms, and you have your general assembly in a private but public space, much like Zuccotti.
Right.
And you could bring your family, you could bring your grievances, you could bring relatives, you could bring friends and
so this coworkers. This is like for the middle class contingent, as it were. Occupy a hotel, pay the bill, and occupy a hotel, in other words.
Exactly.
Yeah. And just a quick question. Tonight at Constitution Hall is the Republican debate, just a few blocks away from McPherson Square there in here in Washington, D.C. Any plans or maybe, I don't know, maybe this is not a question to be discussing in public, but... or maybe it is. I don't know. Any plans to show up?
Oh, yeah. We'll definitely be there.
Oh, cool. Okay.
We will definitely be there in full attendance with other Occupy movements, and we've already collaborated with Occupy DC, Occupy Baltimore, and, as you know, Occupy Wall Street. We'll all come together and let people know what we're all about.
Yeah. Really. So tonight it'll be Occupy the Republican Debate. That should be entertaining. Panama, OccupyTheHighway.org for the whole story on that. You can check it out. Panama, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, not a problem, and we really appreciate the support. And the next step is Occupy Hotel, and that's on Twitter, so check us out. And
okay, Occupy Hotels on Twitter. You got it. Thank you, Panama.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Are you better off watching Fox TV or nothing at all? Really surprising study results here.
Oh yeah, they're selling propaganda and pretending it's fact. Must be a Fox News with those right-wing views. Yeah, they're trying to convince you the rich should get richer. Now ain't that some...
Back in the 70s, I think it was 72, 73, something like that. A fellow by the name of Roger Ailes was working in the Nixon White House, and he signed off on this proposal to create something called GOP TV that would pretend to be a news service, but would actually be an institution that would put out the Republican talking points. Purely partisan, purely Republican, thus the name that Roger Ailes signed off on, GOP TV. Richard Nixon didn't have the money for it and was skeptical whether anybody would actually pay any attention to something called GOP TV, and so it didn't happen until Rupert Murdoch came along with $500 million, $500 million. He lost $100 million a year for 5 years before Sean Hannity made his first penny. Talk about failures. And, you know, finally they got some traction. It took 5 years to get an audience, and now they've grown to the point where they have a couple million viewers. Now we have, you know, 300 million people in the United States, and they have an audience on a really, really, really good day of maybe 1.5 million. So it's just a tiny fraction of America. But it's amazing how people who watch Fox TV are actually more poorly informed about the events of the day than people who watch no TV. This is a study that was done by Farley Dickinson University. They surveyed New Jersey residents about the uprisings in the Middle East and asked like really simple questions like, did the Egyptians overthrow their government or not? People who watch Fox News were 18 points more likely to have the wrong answer, to not even know that it happened, that the Arab Spring happened, than people who watch no TV news. Similarly, they said, well, what about the Syrian uprising? What's going on with that? People who watch Fox News, far less likely to know what's going on than people who watch no news. Fox News doesn't just misinform people, it makes them stupid. Which is probably why Mitt Romney thinks that he can get away with this kind of stuff. Like this ad, this is clip number 7 here, Jacob. It's we actually have it also as video. Jim can cue it up. This is a new television ad. You know, the president is going, President Obama is going to New Hampshire, and so Mitt Romney's in New Hampshire. He's going to do a preemptive strike. I'm going to launch an ad against the president. Now, A couple of years ago, the president, do we have the clip, Jacob, of the entire clip in its context where the president said this is what the McCain? No, we don't. Okay. We're going to have to get that at some point. The president basically said, you know, the McCain campaign says we don't need to pay attention to the economy, but we've really got to be working on the economy. In other words, he was saying the opposite, but there was a quote where he was quoting the McCain campaign. The Romney campaign pulled that quote out and turned it into this ad.
That we can steer ourselves out of this crisis. Then who's been in charge of the economy? We need a rescue plan for the middle class. We need to provide relief for homeowners. It's going to take a new direction. If we keep talking about the economy, we're going to lose.
I'm going to do something to government. I call it the smaller, simpler,
right.
Smarter
we can stop
approach.
There because I don't really need to hear Mitt Romney. But the fact of the matter is that they start out with a quote from Barack Obama in which he is quoting John McCain. In other words, it's an ad based on a lie. It's based on a very simple lie. So here is what the good folks over at the Center for American Progress Think Progress blog did. They put together a mashup of things that Mitt Romney has said, and, you know, pretty much the same way the president said it, you know, like quoting Democrats or quoting straw men or whatever. Only, you know, by the standards of the Mitt Romney campaign, these are perfectly appropriate things to put into a campaign ad. Here it is.
Maybe. We should just raise everybody's taxes.
There's nothing unique about the United States.
Government knows better than a free people how to guide an economy.
Fiscal responsibility is heartless and immoral.
Let us just raise your taxes some more. We just need a little bit more.
America's just another nation with a flag.
Yeah. So, anyway, I think it's pretty amazing. It's absolutely pretty amazing. And the president is speaking right now. And you know, he's doing a press conference. I'm not going to go to it live, because, you know, any news that comes out of it, we will share with you in the next few minutes. And B, I know some stations don't carry us live, and it would be kind of old news, and so there'd be no point in doing that. But I just find this amazing. Just to recap a couple of what I think are really big news stories today, that the Department of Commerce has said that the transnational corporations in America have laid off 864,000 American workers, while they've hired over 2 million people overseas. And they call themselves American corporations, but they don't pay taxes here, number one. Number two, that the Republicans blew up the super committee because they were more loyal to Grover Norquist than to you, me, or this country. Number three, that, you know, the study has come out. If you watch Fox so-called news, I call it GOP TV, you're actually stupider than somebody who watches no news at all. I mean, more poorly informed. It's incredible. And four, Mitt Romney has rolled out his first ad. Oh, and it's got a lie belt right into it, you know, pointing out this is like saying to us, okay, we're going to be going negative all the time. It's really rather mind-boggling. And then on top of that, Jennifer Fox, 19-year-old Jennifer Fox, who was at an Occupy Seattle meeting, and the police came in to break it up, and she started saying, I'm trying to get out of here. I am 3 months pregnant. I'm trying to leave. Just let me out of here. And one police officer beat her in the stomach with his billy club. And then another police officer rammed her in the stomach with his bicycle wheel. And then another police officer pepper sprayed her in the face, so she fell on the ground screaming, I can't see, I can't see. Her eyes were swollen shut. Now, this is military grade. This is a military grade chemical. It's an it's 10 times more potent than habaneros, among the most powerful peppers there are. This is chemical weaponry. But clip 8, Jacob, here's what Megyn Kelly said on Bill O'Reilly's show about this last night.
Well, now the chancellor of UC Davis and the police chief there are both being called upon to resign. Here now, attorney and Fox News anchor Megyn Kelly. You see her at 1 p.m. each weekday. First of all, pepper spray. That just burns your eyes, right?
Right. I mean, it's like a derivative of actual pepper. It's a food product, essentially.
Yeah, it's just a food product. You know, it's just like the police are throwing tomatoes. Which is why several people were hospitalized and why this young woman lost her baby that she wanted. She was going to name the baby Miracle. And when she started having cramps and bleeding, she went to the hospital. They did a sonogram and a whatever those stethoscope and said, you know, we can't find the heartbeat anymore. And then, boom, she miscarried. After being beaten twice by the police in the stomach as she was screaming, I'm pregnant, don't hit me in the stomach. And then pepper sprayed. And pepper spray, by the way, will cause cardiac arrhythmia and can cause sudden death, especially to a fetus. And where, you know, I don't know, maybe the Right to Life movement will come out in her defense. We'll see. Gary in Connecticut. Hey, Gary, what's up? Gary?
Yeah, it's time. You there?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Okay. Hey, let me just say, first off, I'm a proud flaming Northeast Union liberal, so let me get that out there first.
Okay.
But I just want to say,
but?
I just want to give a plug to Fox News. You know what? Say what we will about Fox News, but there is no news channel in all of America that works as hard as they do for a political agenda to push talking points. Our boy Jon Stewart once had a clip of them in the morning starting to spread a rumor, and then by the end of the day, they were reporting it as news from the rumors that they started on their morning show. No news organization in the world would be able to pull off such a stunt unless they worked very hard at it. So as much as we hate Fox News or their political agenda, you got to give them credit. They do work hard at spreading their misinformation. So,
I got to tell you, you know, there have been a number of times when Louise and I have been either at home or in other cities, and we wanted to know what the news was, and you go to CNN and they've got one of their feature shows on, and you know, some commentary show or some lawyer talking about something. You go to MSNBC and they're showing old documentaries or lockup things, or in the morning it's a right-wing Republican host, Joe Scarborough. He's their biggest show and he runs for 3 hours. Or you go to all of the networks, and of course there's no news at all, and the only place you can actually find 24/7 days a week live news reporting is on Fox News. And I think that's very smart of, you know, when Roger Ailes put together GOP TV, it was brilliant, and you're right. Joe, I'm sorry. Hey, Joe, hang on just a minute here. Joe in Albuquerque. Here's President Obama quoting Mr. Kaine.
Senator McCain's campaign actually said, and I quote, if we keep talking about the economy, we're going to lose.
Now, that the last half of that is what was made into that Mitt Romney ad. All they did was they took the last half of that. He said, Senator McCain's campaign said, and I quote, and then he quoted it. And Mitt Romney took that, just that quote, if we keep talking about the economy, we're going to lose, and turned that into a television ad that's running right now as we speak in the state of New Hampshire. This is a guy, Mitt Romney, this is a guy who will lie about anything to be president of the United States. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 866-987-THOM. TomHartman.com. Drop into our live chat room, blogs, message boards, all kinds of fun stuff.
It's my life.
Nine and a half minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Here's one of the, it was a great speech that the president just gave. Here's one of the comments that he had to make. I thought this was a particularly bright, shining moment in the speech.
That idea of America is more powerful than anything else. But we've got to have folks in Washington who have that same belief. That same sense that, you know, when this economy is going well, it's going well because it's going well for everybody. And when it goes well for everybody, it's good for folks at the top as well as folks at the bottom. And it's certainly good for folks in the middle. So those values that built this country, those values that all of you represent, that's what we're fighting for. That's what the American Jobs Act is all about. That's what the debates in Washington are all about. And we've got to constantly remind ourselves of who we are and what we believe in.
Yeah, there you go. Who we are and what we believe in. And, you know, well, I'll just leave it at that. He said it very well. Rama in Espanola, New Mexico. Hey, Rama, what's up?
Greetings. I just wanted to say your story about the policeman that hit the pregnant lady.
Two policemen who hit her in the stomach, who beat her in the stomach, yes.
Yes, I wish to say, why is this man not charged with murder, just like what's going on in Tahrir Square? Where is the justice?
I don't know the law in the state of Wisconsin. I know there are some states where if you assault a woman and it causes her to abort then or miscarry, that you can be charged with manslaughter and or conceivably even murder. And I don't know the status of the law in Washington state, but it's a sentiment that I'm surprised we have not been hearing from the Right to Life movement on this. You know, this is a woman who was screaming, I'm 3 months pregnant, please don't hit my stomach. And that's the part of their body, of her body, that they went for. And then they pepper sprayed her. And this is on videotape, by the way. Joe in Albuquerque. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Tom. Love your show. I have a question. With the 99 percenters, one of the next steps that they can possibly do and our nation can do is, why don't we start boycotting American goods that are produced overseas? I mean, we...
Because there would be nothing to buy. There would be nothing to buy. It's not, you know, Joe, this is the perennial problem. You know, I, for example, for years and years, I've tried to boycott Walmart. You know, just... Because I don't like Walmart. And we were living in New Hampshire a couple of years ago, about 6 or 7 years ago. I needed to buy a pillow. And, you know, long story. Anyhow, I needed to buy a couple of pillows. And I needed them right away because, you know, we had company coming. And the only store I could find within 100 miles of where I lived in Montpelier, Vermont, was a Walmart that carried pillows. Because they had basically, you know, when a Walmart comes into town, on average, between 100 and 140 local businesses over the course of the next 24 months will go out of business. And so, you know, all I could do was go to the Walmart to buy the pillow. And many Americans are facing that problem. You can't buy a cell phone made in the United States because we don't make them in the United States anymore. You can't buy a computer made in the United States because we don't make them anymore. I think there's one small company that assembles them, but all the parts are made in China, Japan, Mexico, overseas, things like that. So, you know, boycott, and it's not the fault of these companies. It's not the fault of Walmart or of Apple or of Dell or what, you know, fill in the blanks, that they're making their stuff overseas. I mean, the fact of the matter is Apple, there was a study done. Apple, if they brought their manufacturing back to the United States, could still be profitable, but not anywhere near as profitable as they are. And you know, so the stockholders would be unhappy. The fault is with the politicians. The fault is with frankly, both the Republicans and the Democrats, who said free trade is a wonderful thing, and we're going to ignore the 20% of Americans who voted for Ross Perot and who agreed with him that if this insane policy, if we abandon a manufacturing policy for the United States, if we abandon trade policies that we had literally had since the George Washington administration, that would somehow be a wonderful thing. Well, it was a wonderful thing for about 1,000 transnational corporations. It was a wonderful thing for about a dozen other countries besides us. But for the United States of America, it was a total disaster. So it's not a matter of going after the companies or even the products. It's a matter of going after the lawmakers who changed the laws, because they can change them back. Lawrence in Seattle. Hey, Lawrence, what's up? Lawrence?
I think maybe she didn't hear my name.
Lawrence, you are on the air. Or maybe it's not Lawrence. Lauren?
No, it's Lauren with a W.
Oh, okay. Lauren. Hey, you're on the air. I'm sorry.
Yeah, what I found interesting is, so I heard that report and started looking on our local affiliate, King 5 News, here to see something on the story.
Right.
I found nothing, so I called them to say what's going on with this.
Yeah, her name is Jennifer Fox, by the way. What's the name of the...
Yeah, you know, Jennifer Fox. What they said was that they went out and interviewed the couple last night and decided to pull the story from the news.
Because...
So I just looked online. and on Como TV up here as well. No such story. Interestingly, you search Forbes.com. It is on their website, but I think it's incumbent of us to put some pressure on the media and say, why aren't you doing your job?
So you live in Seattle. Right. This woman is a Seattle resident. She was 3 months pregnant. The Seattle police broke up the event that she was at. She was yelling, I'm trying to get out of here. Let me out of here. I'm trying to get out of here. I'm 3 months pregnant. And instead, they beat her in the stomach and pepper sprayed her. Now she has miscarried. And that story is not being carried in the Seattle media? Is that what you're telling
me? Correct. In fact, not only is it not being carried, but King 5 News went out and actually interviewed her and her significant other last night and decided not to run the story.
That's incredible. That's incredible.
My thought is for all of us to call King 5 and they say, why aren't you doing your job?
Yeah, and when you ask them why didn't you run the story, I mean, maybe I've got some of the facts wrong, or did they not dispute the facts?
I asked them, they would not. They said they couldn't give me. They didn't know.
Yeah, amazing. Lauren, thank you very much for the call, and thanks for listening to Talk 1090 there in Seattle. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, on this day, some 48 years ago, Lamar could tell me. I think I can't do math that fast. It was 48 years ago this day, right, Lamar?
That's correct, Tom. Today is the 48th anniversary of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy.
Right. And let me introduce Lamar Waldron, JFK historian, I'm the co-author of both Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy. Legacyofsecrecy.com is the website for this tome, this 900-plus page book. As Liz Smith said, this is serious. And Lamar, some news, first of all, about this book that we wrote. We announced some months ago that Warner Brothers is going to make it into a movie, and that Leonardo DiCaprio was going to star in it. There's somebody else who has jumped in.
That's correct. There's a lot more we can talk about today about exactly what is going to be in the movie, but nothing is more exciting than the fact that Robert De Niro is going to be in the Legacy of Secrecy movie. And this great, Oscar-winning actor, one of the great actors of our time, for movies going back to The Godfather 2 and Goodfellas and Casino and so many great roles, Taxi Driver, one of my favorites, he is going to be portraying the man who is really America's most dangerous godfather, Carlos Marcello, who is the godfather of pretty much the entire state of Texas, Louisiana, parts of other states. And it was Carlos Marcello who, as the movie will show, actually confessed to the assassination of John F. Kennedy, not just in a very general way, but a very specific way. And he added so many details about, how he killed President Kennedy, his meetings with Jack Ruby, who was basically his man. Many of your listeners were here today for the first time, something that's been long suspected, but we can now confirm that Carlos Marcello was actually the hidden owner of Jack Ruby's Carousel Club in Dallas. Now, nobody's ever been able to figure out who owned half of Ruby's Carousel Club. Well, it was Carlos Marcello, because Marcello, controlled the rackets in Dallas. Ruby was just a front for him, but there's so much information in the movie, and a great thing about it confirms what Robert Kennedy himself told other people after his own private investigations, where Bobby Kennedy actually said and told associates that Carlos Marcello had killed President Kennedy, his own brother. So
not as in pulled the trigger, but as in put the hit together.
Exactly. He put the hit together, because at the very time JFK was being assassinated, this is also the 48th anniversary of when Carlos Marcello was in a New Orleans courtroom on trial with Bobby Kennedy's own federal prosecutor, facing conviction and deportation because Marcello was not even a citizen. So, again, mafia, and especially Marcello, backs to the wall. No choice. And so now Robert De Niro is going to help to bring this important story to the screen along with Leonardo DiCaprio.
And who's Leonardo DiCaprio going to play in the movie?
Well, he's going to play a tremendously interesting character most people have never heard of by the name of Jack Van Lanningham. Most people have never heard of Jack Van Lanningham because nobody knew who he was until 2006. I didn't know when I found his files at the National Archives when they had been released as part of the 4.5 million files that have really helped us just put the whole story together even more than what Robert Kennedy was able to figure out, and we confirmed what Robert Kennedy did find. Jack Van Lanningham was pretty much an ordinary person, a successful businessman and a good family man, not a criminal. But he in the early 80s, he became very despondent after his troubled alcoholic wife left him, and then Jack literally had one bad day that people will see in the movie that landed him in federal prison. Where he became the confidant and cellmate of Carlos Marcello. So you have this incredible movie where you have this ordinary guy, Leonardo DiCaprio, who finds himself in prison with America's most powerful godfather, and the only way that Leo's character, Jack Van Lanningham, can not serve his full 8-year sentence is if he helps the FBI. So even at the time he is becoming Marcello's confidant and cellmate, because he wasn't a criminal. He wasn't sucking up to Marcello asking for favors. He didn't know who Marcello was before he went to this Texas federal prison. Leo's character is put in the incredible position of finding out all of this information, many, many crimes, not just JFK's murder. Right. But I mean, imagine if you're the cellmate of a man who literally killed the President of the United States and got away with it. And you know if he finds out you're really helping the FBI and you're taking a specially bug transistor radio into the cell, and the FBI has a lot of the material we're talking about on tape,
right,
of Marcello's confessions and talking about meeting Ruby and Lee Harvey Oswald, who was not the shooter, by the way, as Marcello explains. It's just an amazing suspense thriller kind of story that also explains exactly who killed John F. Kennedy and why.
Yeah, and Lamar, it's the 48th anniversary. The movie is going to come out on the 50th anniversary, assuming that, you know, Warner Brothers gets it together, and De Niro has not signed on. He simply said he wants to be part of the movie.
Right, right. He definitely wants to be part. There's a whole green light process that has to happen.
Right. And there's still a bunch of hoops that this has to hop through. Although you know, you and I we've signed contracts with Warner.
And by the way, here's the great reason the movie is going to get made. Leonardo DiCaprio, who's a great actor, a wonderful star in Hollywood, a very progressive environmental guy, he's not just starring in the movie. He and his father, another great progressive, George DiCaprio, are producing the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So they really want to tell this important story.
Right. And the documentary that may accompany it or come out afterwards with that Earl Katz is going to be involved in.
Right, because this is part of a big story, but the rest of the story is really going to be able to be told in the documentary that will go with Legacy of Secrecy, because Warner was nice enough to let you and I keep those documentary rights.
Right.
So yeah, there'll be a 2-hour theatrical documentary that will probably actually come out before the movie. And then the movie itself. So hopefully people know this important story.
Here's the question, Lamar. Here we are 48 years later.
Right.
Many of the people listening to this program were not even born when Jack Kennedy was killed. Many of them were young enough when it happened. And you and I are a couple of old farts. We were little kids when it happened, but we both remember it. Many people have no recollection of it. The Kennedy assassination in their mind is in the same category as the Lincoln assassination. Why is, in the 1 minute we have left, why is the Kennedy assassination still important today?
There are two really big reasons. One is it's an incredible story of government secrecy and how and why those 4.5 million pages of files were kept secret. And of course, government secrecy is important today, from 9/11 to the Iraq wars, everything we deal with. But it also, the reason for that government secrecy was Cuba and the fact that Marcello had managed to plant phony evidence, as we document in Legacy of Secrecy and in super detail in Ultimate Sacrifice, phony evidence implicating Fidel Castro in JFK's assassination, and a lot of high-level officials, from Lyndon Johnson to the head of the CIA to Alexander Haig, people who became very powerful even decades later, believed, and Haig believed this till he died last year, that Fidel Castro was behind JFK's
assassination. Yeah, LBJ went to his grave believing this.
Exactly. And they believed that phony evidence that we...
And therefore they had to cover it up, because if the word got out that Castro had killed Kennedy, you'd have war with the Soviet Union, and that would be the end of life as we know it.
And that is why we still have those Kennedy-era sanctions against Cuba today. So getting this story out will be the one thing that can help finally normalize those relations with Cuba.
And wouldn't that be an amazing thing? Lamar Waldron, legacyofsecrecy.com. You can read all about it. Thank you, Lamar.
Thank you so much, Tom. I appreciate it.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Legacyofsecrecy.com. As I said, you can read all about it. It's an amazing, amazing story. We'll be back. What about Jennifer Fox?
Anybody here seen my old friend John? Can you tell me where he's gone? He freed a lot of people, but it seemed good they die young. I just looked around and he's gone.
Digging back the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you, and welcome back. First of all, I noticed that we've got a bunch of callers about various theories on the JFK assassination. I'm not going to take those calls. I'll just, you know, drop off the line right now. I don't want to turn this into a micro debate about whether this person was there or that person or what the theories are and all that kind of thing. It's, you know, if you want to know what I think about it and what Lamar thinks about it, you could just read our books. And that's not a pitch for the book. It's just, you know, it's, I've been down that road before on this show, and what happens is it's like doing 9/11. We will take a day a couple of times a year. We'll take a day and just talk about the JFK assassination for the whole day, or talk about 9/11 for the whole day. But they're the kind of topics that they're because there is no possible resolution. It just brings everybody. So, and in addition, I think that there's some very, very big news. And it's not news that today is the 48th anniversary of the assassination of Kennedy. And I think one of the most important pieces of news out there is the incredible iconic power. I talked about this yesterday, that this is an iconic image. And I know a number of other people use that phraseology. I'm assuming that it was just, you know, anybody looking at it would immediately get that. Not that, you know, people have sent me emails saying, do you know so-and-so ripped off your riff from yesterday? And I'm like, I don't think so. I think it's just anybody would look at that line of young people at UC Davis, the University of California campus at Davis, and the officer who went up and down, Officer John Pike, who went up and down the row of young people and sprayed them in the face with military-grade, super-concentrated pepper spray, 10 times hotter than habanero peppers. I mean, this is stuff that it gets in your eyes, it gets in your nose, it gets in your lungs. It can cause cardiac arrest. That's called a heart attack. And apparently, in the case in Seattle, there was this young woman, Jennifer Fox, who was beaten in the stomach and then hit in the stomach with a bicycle tire as well by two separate police officers when she was screaming, I'm 3 months pregnant, please don't hit my stomach. That was the part of her body they went after. And then they pepper sprayed her. And you can see the video of this. It's over at Raw Story right now, and I'm sure it's probably gone everywhere else. They pepper sprayed her to the point where she was blind. She could no longer move. She was literally blind. Her eyes were swollen shut. And yesterday she miscarried. She was going to name the baby Miracle. And they said, there's no more heartbeat. And then the cramps and the miscarriage. And at 3 months in pregnancy, that's no small thing. So what I want to do is, and I'm going to lock out our phone lines right now. And our call screener is going to go through and just basically drop all our calls. because I, you know, I just have a couple of minutes left here. I want to riff a little bit about the news. But then at the bottom of the hour, after we come back from the break at the bottom of the hour, we're just going to let the phones ring. In other words, we won't answer the phone. And when I do answer your line, I would like to know what you would say to Lieutenant John Pike, to this police officer. You have you know, a maximum of 15 seconds to say it. So give some thought to it. I'll put you on the air for up to 15 seconds. And what would you say to this police officer? And please, no obscenities or anything like that. I'm not looking for anger. I'm not looking for anything in particular. I'm curious what your response was. And I'll tell you afterwards what what I would say to him if he were on this program. But Police Lieutenant John Pike is one of the two guys who pepper sprayed this crowd. His name has gone viral. I'm not doing some great disclosure on this program at the UC campus, at the UC Berkeley campus. He's not the guy who punched out the woman in the stomach, who had Jennifer Fox, who had the miscarriage. He is the guy with the giant can of military grade pepper spray who was spraying the peaceful protesters. So my question is, what would you say to that person, to this officer, human being to human being? And I'm guessing we're going to get a whole spectrum of response, but I have no idea. So what we're going to do is that you will hear the phone ring and ring and ring when you call in, and we have two numbers. One is six lines on each, a total of 12 lines. We have six lines on each number. The first is 866-987-THOM, and the second is 866, and we'll use our conservative number, 745-CONS. Either one of those lines you can call into. But, 866-987-THOM, I'm going to be going through them fast, right? And what I'm going to say is your name and city and your statement to Officer Pike. And then you can say whatever you want. And again, please, no obscenity. We do have a dump button here. If you do say something obscene, it'll just be bleeped off the air. So don't even, don't bother trying. And, you may want to say something in support of him. This is the guy who was spraying the people, the kids at the University of California, Davis, with pepper spray, the nonviolent protesters. What's the message that he should get from America? And consider, this guy, he's a middle-class guy, he's a police officer. I'm guessing at some level he believed he was doing exactly what he was supposed to be doing. He was doing his job. Or maybe not. Maybe he went rogue. What would you say to him? We'll unblock the lines in about 4 minutes after this break. And I'll announce it, and then I'll just take your calls. 15 seconds, your opportunity to speak to Officer
You're
Pike.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And then we'll toss it up on YouTube, and he can watch it and listen to your comments if he would like to. We'll be back.
While the words you say,
okay, welcome back. Here's how it works. I just open up all the phone lines. You call 866-987-THOM, and nobody's going to answer the phone. You'll just hear it ring and ring and ring until I put you on the air. You will be live on the air, and I will ask you for your name and a city, and you will have 10 to 15 seconds, let's say 10 seconds, to make a comment to Officer Pike what you would say to him. So, and I'll call out your zip code or your area code. We have caller ID here, so I'll just call you so you'll know who you are. So, area code 575, what name and city, and what do you have to say to Officer Pike? Okay, let's try area code 310, your name and city, and what you have to say to Officer Pike.
Steve, and I would tell him that he's a coward.
Okay, thank you. Area code 651, your name and city, and what you have to say to Officer Pike.
David in St. Paul, Minnesota. You have the right to remain silent. Anything that you say will be used in the court of law, or I hope someone at some point says this to him as he's arrested and punished for his crimes.
Okay, thank you. Area code 360, your name and city, what you have to say to Officer Pike.
Kirsten, Aberdeen, Washington. I have a son who was accepted by your human resources department for a hire. Now I know why he is not there.
Okay, thank you very much. Area code 912, your name and city and what you would say to Officer Pike.
Yes, Brunswick, Georgia. And what I would like to say to the officer is that they need to be careful because after they round up the teachers and the post office and the fire department, the police department will be next. And then when they have the police department, then Blackwater will go in there and act as
Got it. We're out of time. Thank you very much. Area code 314, your name, city, and message for Officer Pike.
Yeah, Ken from St. Louis. I think he's just illustrated normal human behavior when you put an outfit on a guy like that and give him power.
Okay, thank you very much. Area code 805, your name, city, and what you would say to Officer Pike.
John, San Luis Obispo, California. Officer Pike, you are a coward. Resign, ask for forgiveness for those he tortured, and then join the Peace Corps. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you. Area code 503, your name, city, and what you would say to Officer Pike.
Hey, Al, Charlestown, New Hampshire. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances.
Okay, great. You'd read him the First Amendment. Area code 941, your name, city, and what you'd say to Officer Pike. Okay, you got to listen to your phone. Area 646, your name, city, and what you'd say to Officer Pike. Okay. Area code 360, your name, city, and what you'd say to Officer Pike.
As a Vietnam-era veteran, a UC Davis graduate, retired law enforcement, I'm saddened and embarrassed by your deplorable actions taken against peaceful student protesters.
Thank you. Area code 503, your name, city, and what you'd say to Officer Pike.
Kathy Thompson, Morrow, Ohio. Officer Pike, you are very sadistic. I hope you get help soon.
Thank you. Area code 925, your name, city, and what you'd say to Officer Pike.
Virginia Jarvis, I would say it's too bad it didn't happen to you and your mother.
Ouch. Area code 6, thank you. Area code 602, your name, city, and what you'd say to Officer Pike.
These students desperately trying to make life better for themselves and others, which could include your own son or daughter, I implore you to ask yourself why you purposely and intentionally hurt these nonviolent students. You need help, but only if you can see that for yourself.
Okay. Area code 925, what your name, city, and what you would say to, first name, city, and what you would say to Officer Pike.
Yes, I'm Renee from Concord, California. As a psychologist, I would like to ask Mr. Pike, what is your own family history of childhood abuse and or trauma?
Okay, thank you very much. Area code 405, your name, your first name, city, and what you would say to Officer Pike.
My name is Ruben from Cincinnati. Officer Pike, you are the new Bull Connors. What you did was equivalent to turning the water hose on the civil rights, those children in the civil rights movement.
Thank you very much. Area code 231, your name, your first name, your city, and what you would say to Officer Pike.
Oh, this is Barbara Richmond, and I'd like to know if we have crossed-the-board cuts on will the Senate and congressmen have...
Okay, that's off topic. I'm sorry. Area code 941, your name, city, and what you would say to Officer Pike.
Oh, if we have...
Okay, can't hear you. Area code 816, your name, your first name, your city, and what you would say to Officer Pike.
Mike, Kansas City. Officer Pike, why have you chosen to be remembered on the wrong side of history?
Thank you. Area code 715, your name, your city, first name, your city, and what you would say to Officer Pike.
Sophia, Maysville, Kentucky, I would say please put down your kin and join us.
And thank you. Area code 602, your name, your city, and what you would say to Officer Pike.
Patrick Solomon from Phoenix, Arizona. Officer Pike, how do you justify the use of military-grade pepper spray on peaceful student protesters who are exercising their First Amendment rights?
Okay. Area code 973, your name, city, and what you'd say to Officer Pike.
Michael Scottsdale. A few months ago, we were admonished to support police, fire, and teacher unions, and I still support them and support the police officers. God bless you, Officer Pike.
Okay. Area code 480, your name, your city, and what you'd say to Officer Pike.
I'm Tom, Phoenix, Arizona. I would tell Officer Pike that Captain Kirk is not happy, and therefore he is not going to go to the planet for his peaceful rehabilitation anymore. The Tribbles are coming.
Okay, thank you. Area code 310, your name, city, and what you'd say to Officer Pike.
Hi, my name is Jenna Lee from Manhattan Beach, California. Officer Pike, you are a sick, sick man, and you really need help. God bless you and forgive you, and please turn a new leaf. You are very sick.
Okay, thank you. Area code 405, your first name, city, and what you'd say to Officer Pike.
Yes, my name is Jimmy. I'm in Berryville, Arkansas. I'd like to tell that man, just as you treat people, you shall be treated.
Okay, thank you very much. Area 757, your name, first name, city, and what you'd say to Officer John Pike.
Carol, Williamsburg, Virginia. Officer Pike, that was not police enforcement. That was thuggery.
Okay, thank you. Area code 208, your name, city, first name, city, and what you'd say to Officer Pike.
John, Highbridge, New Jersey, you're fired.
Okay. Area code 541, your first name, your city, and what you'd say to Officer Pike.
My name is Sina Zimmerman, and I'm from Myrtle Creek. And I would say, is your mother watching you do this?
Okay, thank you. Area code 503, your first name, city, and what you'd say to Officer Pike.
This is Vegan Sid in Portland, Oregon. I marched in civil rights in the 60s, and I want to ask Officer Pike if he thinks it was worth it.
Okay, thank you. Area code 206, your name, city, and what you'd say to Officer Pike.
My name is Bill, and I'm in Kent, Ohio. And I'd like to ask him to read Bartleby the Scrivener, A Story of Wall Street, and consider why nothing so aggravates an earnest person as a passive resistance.
Okay, thank you. Phil Proctor, in fact, played in that play. Area code 831, your name, your city, and what you would say to Officer Pike.
This is 206, Devron, Seattle. Mm-hmm. And make yourself in the face as long and as well the officers that did this horrible thing to Jennifer Smith in Seattle.
Okay, thank you. Area code 917, your name, your city, and what you'd say to Officer Pike.
Your name, your city,
and what you'd say to Officer Pike. Okay. Area code 781, your name, your first name, your city, and what you'd say to Officer Pike.
Berkeley, James, mm-hmm. and the UC Berkeley chancellor set the precedent by saying, holding, you know, linking arms is nonviolent. He's following precedent. It's terrible. The removal should start at the top.
Okay, thank you. Area code 208, your name, your city, your first name, your city, and what you'd say to Officer Pike.
My name is Mario, and I'm calling from Two Falls, Idaho. And the only thing I want to say is if it's a felony to treat dogs like that, how come human beings are getting, you know, treated like that? And if that's a felony to a dog, how can we do that to a human being?
Okay, thank you. Area code 601, your first name, your city, and what you'd say to Officer Pike.
Bob from Ozona, Florida. Officer Pike, even though you were following instructions from Chief, your chief, Spacuzzi, you just set a poor example for the world to see and for our children to see. I'm sorry. You should apologize and resign. Thank you.
Thank you. Area code 484, your name, your city, and what you'd say to Officer Pike.
This is Kevin from Kirkwood, Pennsylvania, and I would just like to say to Officer Pike that we, the American people, truly see you for what you are. Thank you.
Thank you. Area code 304, your name, your city, and what you'd say to Officer Pike.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Calamity from Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
I would tell Officer Pike, you're fired, and everybody responsible for your actions, your protocols, and your training are also fired and should be condemned, and this should never happen again.
Okay, thank you. Area code 973, your name, your city, and what you'd say to Officer Pike.
Dan Williams, Portland, Oregon. I'd say, Officer Pike, you have some really big cojones to pull something like that in today's America. I would direct your attention to a certain coffee shop in Seattle. There's a lot of nut jobs out there. I'd be careful.
Okay. Area code 253. Hopefully that's not a threat. Area code 253, your name, your city, and what you would say to Officer Pike. Okay. Area code 206, your name, your city, and what you'd say to Officer Pike.
Steve from Vancouver, Washington. Officer Pike, I would like to know what the threat from these peaceful, nonviolent protesters did you perceive that needed this kind of a response?
Okay. Last caller is 614. Your name, your city, what you'd say to Officer Pike.
Ed
Topher, Columbus, Ohio. Officer Pike, you have subjected the kids to the uniform military code of justice, and they're not enlisted. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Remarkable. Thank you very much. If you're still calling, we're done with that. It's our venting session. We'll post it on air. We'll be right back with the Talk Radio News Service. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service is with us. Talk Radio News brought to you by the new book, Self-Empowerment, 9 Things the 19th Century Can Teach Us About Living in the 21st Century, by Ellen Ratner and Ann Gaiman.
That's right.
And by you yourself.
Well, and you gave me a little blurb on it.
Yes, indeed. And it's a remarkable book. As they say, sometimes we can't see the forest for the trees. And this, I need not read my blurb.
Right.
So anyhow, Ellen has a new book out. It's called Self-Empowerment. Check it out. Ellen, what's going on in the world?
Okay, well, you know something? The wonderful thing is I read a lot of science in addition to reading.
So do I. I'm a total science junkie.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
In fact, we do a segment every week called Geeky Science News.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I'm a AAAS member. I get science. I get new scientists.
We should engage on that.
Yeah.
All right, that's a long story. But anyhow, so Scientific American today, in their daily little update, they did a report on what pepper spray really means.
Yes.
And it is not pretty. Particularly, there was a guy named Wilbur Scoville, and he developed the intensity scale of pepper's burns.
Right, the Scoville scale.
That's right. And the pepper that you or I buy in a store is not what the cops are using.
No, it's not capable of burning your skin.
That's right. But this is really a much higher number. It's got a lot of really dangerous things in it. These chemicals can produce, apparently, adverse cardiac, respiratory, neurological effects, including arrhythmia and sudden death.
Right.
This is
military grade pepper spray that Officer Pike was spraying on these kids.
Well, and then it looks like they did the same thing that hasn't hit the news in Oklahoma.
When?
Over the weekend, I guess.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is some kind of coordinated pepper moment.
Yeah.
And it's not pretty.
Yeah. Did you hear what Megyn Kelly had to say about that in Fox?
No, I didn't.
It's just a food product. Yeah. No comment necessary. So what else is going on?
I like to give you good economic news when we get it. The FDIC said that there was a big there was actually some bank profits. It has increased since last year, almost $12 billion. That's really good news. It shows that banks are not losing money. We're not going to have to do the rescue of banks that we thought they would. Now, some people would say banks shouldn't be making money. I understand that. On the other hand, it's good economic news that we're not in the hole anymore.
Except that there's still several hundred trillion dollars worth of derivatives out there.
Derivatives, right.
Yeah,
right.
So,
but that's not necessarily banks, FDIC banks. That's a whole different shtick.
Okay.
Right? I mean, derivatives are like the Wild West. They're talking about strict, you know, you go in your corner bank not losing money.
Right.
The president is going to be pushing for his payroll tax cut. He was in New Hampshire today. Mm-hmm. And in New Hampshire today, he was also talking about, which he talked about yesterday, vets. He talked a lot about the fact, look, there was a guy that was a vet. He was trained essentially as a nurse. And then he came back and he had to start taking all the courses over again. They're trying to rectify that, trying to do something about vets. And also he really pushed hard on the payroll tax. Now, of course, never to miss a moment, the head of the Republican Party in New Hampshire gave a presser today. Well, the president, you know, he's not doing anything about jobs. He came to New Hampshire. He said he was going to do something about jobs. He never has. I mean, it's just same old from the Republican Party on that front.
New Hampshire got some stimulus funds, didn't they?
Every other state. That's right. Exactly.
So.
All right. Carney today, he was aboard Air Force One. He gave,
Jay Carney, the
press secretary. He gave a very short what's called gaggle aboard Air Force One. He said that President Obama meant it when he said that he would veto any effort by lawmakers to undo a series of automatic spending cuts. He said there is no wiggle room. And as you know, the president yesterday said there's no off-ramp on this one. President is intending to put the real pressure on to begin to get a way that Congress is going to have to act.
Very interesting. So if Congress acts, in other words, Congress is going to have to pass a budget that's acceptable to both sides. If they want to avoid those spending cuts to the military, they're going to have to include funding for the military in that budget.
That's right. And, you know, it's amazing that they actually got this through. I think they didn't, the Republicans in the House didn't think it through when they passed it.
Oh, I think they thought it through and they assumed that Obama would cave. So
interesting.
We'll see.
Okay. Well, whatever. They didn't.
I think they misunderestimated him.
Right. Well, they shouldn't underestimate him. Okay. On Tuesday, today, actually, there are some Republican lawmakers and Brent Bozell, who is now chairman of For America. That's his group. They said they want you to believe that the super committee failed, but in a real way, it's untrue. Tony Perkins, my favorite person from the Family Research Council.
Oh, my.
He said that the committee succeeded. It succeeded, he said, in showing Americans the vast ideological divide that stands between the two main political parties in town. And he said there is a party that believes we can sustain spending levels that have doubled in the last decade. But of course, they're not willing to do anything about the tax situation.
Right. And there is a party that believes that having multimillionaires pay a maximum 15% income tax rate is a great thing. That's the Republican Party.
Right. Also, now the Armed Services Committee said they're going to look for a way to prevent these automatic cuts to the National Defense budget from taking effect.
Is the House Armed Services Committee?
This is House Armed Services. That's right. This was late yesterday. Buck McCain, I think that's how he pronounces his name. I never get it correct. He said, I will not be the Armed Services Chairman who presides over crippling our military. I will not let these sequestration cuts stand. And he said he's going to introduce legislation to stop the cuts from taking place. And he said, those have given us so much have nothing more to give. Oh, give me a break.
Wow. You know, 68% of people who earn over $1 million a year who were polled by, I believe it was the AP,
are willing to give more.
Want their taxes raised.
That's right. That,
like that German businessman who was famously interviewed by, I think, Bloomberg, who said, I don't want to be a rich man in a poor country.
That's right. I mean, it's like people who live in gated communities where poor people live outside. It's not a comfortable situation.
Yeah.
As Senator Harry Reid.
10 seconds.
Oh, he released a statement. 12 lawmakers who traveled to Alabama. He's concerned about the immigration law there.
Oh, interesting. The one that's got the kids scared to go to school.
That's right.
I'm glad to see a national figure picking that thing up, because that's a horrible piece of legislation. Ellen Ratner, thanks so much for being with us today. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. Her new book, Self-Empowerment, 9 Things the 19th Century Can Teach Us About Living in the 21st.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, it was a very interesting, in the last segment before Ellen, a very interesting little slice, a small cross-section of our 3 million-plus listeners' comments and thoughts on, you know, what should be said to Officer John Pike, the guy who was pepper-spraying these kids at UC Davis, or... You know, frankly, I think that, you know, the opinion that people have of authority figures abusing their authority, which that clearly seemed to me to be the case. And now validating that opinion, the chancellor of the university has said that that was the case. So I told you I would tell you my opinion afterwards. I didn't want to be seeding calls, as it were. I didn't want to, you know, be telling you my personal thoughts on what should be said to this officer. But I think, you know, several people said it. Basically, you know, you have the right to remain silent. I think that when somebody commits assault, whether they do it behind the badge of a police officer or whether they do it in a bar fight, assault is assault. And this was assault. These young people were assaulted with a chemical weapon. And the people who assaulted them and the people who participated in assaulting them, in my opinion, should be in jail. It's just as simple. Now, I realize, you know, the penalties for assault are not all that draconian, but they certainly should not be in a position where they can use the force of law to assault people in the future. So to put somebody on paid administrative leave where they continue to get a paycheck and now they can sit around and watch Oprah all day long, or now she's off TV, whatever, you know, people watch when they're home during the day, seems to me not quite the step that should be taken. I mean, the step that should be taken is unpaid leave, pending termination, and possible prosecution. And then let's empower our grand jury and let's find out what's going on. So that's my take. Bob in Kansas City, Missouri. Hey, Bob, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Fine.
I'm wondering why these officers in Seattle that assaulted that pregnant woman and the officers in California haven't been charged or indicted for criminal acts.
I think in the case of the woman in Seattle, now, of course, we don't know the entire story. Sean has been trying to contact her to get to come on the program. We may be able to do that tomorrow. But at the very least, there may be a civil action there. There may be an ability to recover some monetary damages, although you can never recover a lost child. I'm with you, Bob. I'm with you. Michael in Virginia. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hey, Tom, first I'd like to say how great it is to see you back. It's fantastic to see you back, I think.
Well, thank you.
Now, you're welcome. Now, Tom, who's really in control? Okay, we see the pepper spraying of the police officers. Yeah, that may fall under domestic law and possibly some conditions under international law. But now, when we take this on a global scale, it's not just happening here in America. It's happening in Syria. It's happening in Guatemala. It's happening over the entire world, as well as this economic system which they use to control our lives and make us enslaved.
Yes.
Now, how do we change the thing? Who's really in control? Corrupt politicians who take money from lobbyists and vote their way? Or, you know, who's really – how do we change it, Tom?
We change it, frankly, I think, you know, who's in answer to your question, who's really in control, I would say that it is the top, it literally is the top 1% that runs the world. And not in some grand conspiracy fashion, but just, hey, you know, what was the old saying, the golden rule, he who owns the gold makes the rules kind of thing. That's what's going on. And so there has to be, if aggregated capital, if accumulated capital, if accumulated wealth represents both the power of the marketplace, financial power, but also represents political power, and it does, then there has to be something to balance it. And what has historically what has balanced it is, because it's economic power at its core, what historically has balanced it is either, it's one of two things. Either the power of accumulated, aggregated human capital, what would you say, labor, in other words, labor unions, or it's been the force of government. And in most countries, those two things need to go together. In other words, the labor unions only have power if the rules of the game of business are set up that labor unions actually can do things like strike and negotiate and lock out or shut down an organization that's behaving in a way that's inappropriate. And so what we need is a worldwide workers' movement where the workers of the world say, you know, start acquiring power, where labor unions start having power. We can start with here in the United States with card check and rolling back Taft-Hartley, the so-called right to work for less law that was passed in 1947 over President Truman's veto. The Republicans took control of the House and Senate in the election of 46, and bang, that was the first thing they did in 47, was, you know, let's roll back the rights of workers that were given to them in 1935 during the Wagner Act and the National Labor Relations Act by President Roosevelt. So that number one. And number two is roll back the Reagan tax cuts. Those countries that have, where after you make a couple hundred thousand or $1 million, your tax rates go up above 50%. In those countries, you tend not to see boom-bust bubble economies. And you tend not to see king-like wealth emerge. So that's what I would say. Stanley in Texas. Hey, Stanley, what's up?
Hello, Tom.
Hey.
First of all, I was trying to get in and say shame, shame to those, to that police officer.
To Officer Pike, yeah.
You know, yes. Secondly, I'd like to address a subject that you had been addressing a while back, and I couldn't get in on it. But I was reading this book by Derek Jensen called Resistance Against Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And he begins with the economist J.W. Smith, an interview with J.W. Smith. And to put it in a nutshell, he shows how empire started from the city-state not having any resources. Mm-hmm. There's no resources in a city.
Right.
It has to use the resources of the area around it. And in order to keep the area around it from producing their own materials out of their own resources, they conquer them and make them bring the resources to the city in order to get the finished product.
Yes, this is the history, because you can't grow food within a city. You can't mine minerals within a city. You can manufacture things within a city from those raw materials, but the raw materials do come from the rural areas. And what you're describing is the history of modern civilization that started 7,000 years ago in Sumeria. And the first and oldest story of it is the Epic of Gilgamesh, which, you know, from building the city of Ur in what we now call Iraq.
Correct. That is entirely it, that from the very beginning, from when they were hunter-gatherers, everybody had the same size house, basically.
Yep.
But as soon as they become farmers, you started seeing some houses that were bigger than others.
And Daniel Quinn points out in his Ishmael books that goes back to the ability to lock up the food. That when we went to an agricultural society in climates where you had to store food because there were periods of time when there was no food, you know, like winter, then somebody would lock it up and say, I'm the guy who's locked up the food. I own the key to the granary, and therefore y'all got to do what I say. And that's, you know, these are the flaws that are built into our culture and into our civilization. And we have to figure out balancing mechanisms if we're going to have an egalitarian society that works.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
15 minutes past the hour. You can drop into our live chat room. It runs 24/7 at TomHartman.com. Build your own blogs. Make your own message. Whatever you thought. Past the hour, 53 million Americans without health insurance, 44 million Americans on food stamps, 49 million Americans living in poverty, one out of five children, 58% of Americans have a job. The average household, the median yearly wage, not household, individual wage, $26,200 a year. Average household debt, $75,600. American families are $7.7 trillion poorer than they were the day that George W. Bush was elected to office. Bushonomics, which is Reaganomics on steroids, has devastated America. Since 1979, the top 1% has seen their income go up 275%. The bottom fifth has only seen their income go up 18%. The top 1% of Americans own half of all stock, and the top one-tenth of 1% get 50% of all capitalist gains income, where they pay a maximum 15% income tax. Tell me something isn't really wrong. The top six banks own $9 trillion in assets. The GDP of the United States is $15 trillion. At 65% of our entire national GDP is owned by six banks. The top 1% earns more than the bottom 50%. I mean, these things are shocking. And this is why young people are in the streets. And frankly, I think it's why a lot of Tea Partiers went into the streets. I mean, they watch Fox News, so they really didn't know why they were out there. I mean, yes, we need less government because maybe that'll solve the problem. Well, maybe if it's less wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, it would help solve the problem. But this is a populist moment. This is a wake-up moment. Carol in Charlottesville, Virginia. Hey, Carol. Carol, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Good news for Occupy Charlottesville. We were supposed to leave the park this Saturday with our tents and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a three-hour meeting last night with the city council, and 50 Occupy people showed up. most of them talking about their free speech rights, et cetera. And we were given an extension to the end of the year, but one of the Rutherford Institution spoke on our behalf. They're a civil rights and human rights movement, and they said they would work with us and try to help us find a place after the end of the year. But it was a real victory for us. I mean, we were, you know, they kept saying, we're going to kick you out because there are homeless people there, of all things.
Yeah.
And we kept saying, that's the point. You know, we want to show you what the homeless
and there's,
people.
And there's more and more of more and more homeless people every day. And in fact, the most rapidly increasing portion of the homeless population is single women with children.
For
which is
sure.
Scary.
And, you know, I was a single woman with child. He's well grown now. But, you know, you can't kick these people out. That's what we're there for.
Right.
We're there to support them and to point out to the city, you're not taking care of your homeless people.
Yeah.
You know, they have mental health problems. What is the city doing for them? Instead of putting all these police officers around, spend that money on low-income housing. And
there you go.
Mental health institutions.
Very well said. Carol, thank you very much for the update, and thank you for the call. It's great to hear from you, and appreciate that. Doug in Chicago. Hey, Doug, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I know you know a lot about the civil rights movement of the 60s. Do you know who Diane Nash is?
I don't. I don't know anywhere near as much as I should about the civil rights movement in the 60s, frankly.
All right. Well,
I'm sorry.
She's my mom. And just to give you a little bit of what she did, she was the president of SNCC.
I know all about SNCC. Yeah, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. She was the president when they desegregated lunch counters.
Mm-hmm.
And her and my dad thought of and planned the Selma Right to Vote movement.
Wow.
She was the coordinator of the Freedom Rides.
Wow.
She went behind enemy lines during the Vietnam War and met with Ho Chi Minh.
Wow.
On strategies to end the war.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just got numerous awards, and she's a lecturer now.
Mm-hmm.
She's also the subject of a really good movie called Freedom Riders. She's got a prominent thing. But anyway, she's expressed interest in helping the occupiers.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't know, but they really studied nonviolence,
yes.
You know, before they did it. And a guy named Jim Lawson taught them. He went over to India and learned from Gandhi.
Yeah.
So it was really like, you know, passed down. And so she's had some lectures where there were some occupiers and they got a lot out of it.
Yeah.
Because she really knows.
So she wants to make herself available as a resource. Is that the bottom line? Is that the point that you're making?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
Doug, what I'd like to do is put you on hold and have Louise pick up the call and connect you and your mom with my producer, if that's all right with you.
That's fine.
Okay, hang on just a second. I'm going to put you on hold, and Doug's on line four, Louise. Thomas in Gilda Wilderness, New Mexico. Hey, Thomas, what's up?
Just a couple different things. I had called, since I heard the story about Jennifer Fox this morning from you.
Yes.
I went ahead and called the Seattle Police Department, their North Precinct, and they pointed me in the direction of media relations. I'm not sure exactly why.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I got to run around. I'm a firefighter and an EMT, and so I'm well aware of the dangers of
punching a pregnant woman in the stomach.
Yes, exactly. As well as that, the person I talked to claimed that it was all a bunch of hearsay, that there was no proof that anything of that had happened.
I watched the video of it this morning.
He was definitely wanting to have that specific link so that he could have proof.
Okay, tell him to go to rawstory.com.
Excellent. I just wanted to give the number out there for people to call because I think it's a worthy cause for people to be calling in and making their voice known. I'm in the middle of nowhere in New Mexico. I can't do much, but I can at least call. Do you mind if I give out that number?
I would suggest that you. Oh,
you
this is the
it?
Seattle the Seattle
yeah.
Police Department.
Yeah.
Let's not because I don't want to. I don't want them to perceive us as singling them out and anybody can look it up in the phone book.
Absolutely. And can I make one other really short point?
Sure.
For years and years and years, I've been going to rainbow gatherings, which are basically a group of peaceful people who gather in the mountains on the 4th of July.
I'm familiar with the group.
Pray for peace.
Yep.
for about the last 10 years, and I hear your music, there has been a crackdown on our right to peacefully assemble out there. And I think that's something that has slipped everybody's view, and all, even the use of the pepper spray and all that has been going on for a long time by federals out at that point. And
you know, we should get somebody from one of the rainbow groups on to talk about that, because I read about that last year when it happened. Thomas, thank you for that. Thanks for bringing it up, and we'll get on it. I appreciate the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So what's up with the Occupy movement? How do we move forward? What have we learned? And the good, the bad, and the ugly coming up right after this break. Yep, that's the good, the bad, and the very, very thalifithorically ugly. Brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, a supplement for the brain. The good, Kuala Lumpur. The nation hosted a war crimes tribunal against former President George W. Bush and former British Prime Minister Tony Blair. The Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal was assembled by former Malaysian Premier Mahathir Mohamad, who has been very critical of the Iraq war. In a strictly symbolic four-day hearing, the tribunal found both Bush and Blair guilty of, quote, crimes against the peace. In their verdict, the tribunal said the evidence showed that the drums of war were being beaten long before the invasion. The accused, in their own memoirs, have admitted their own intention to invade Iraq regardless of international law, end quote. Seven other Bushies, including Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld, will also be tried by the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal as well. Now, if we can only get the same action started here in the United States. And I'm pretty sure I've been in Kuala Lumpur, and I think it's a city in Malaysia, not a nation. But in any case, the bad. Orange River Elementary School. A sheriff's deputy was called to the Fort Myers, Florida school last week because the assistant principal had an emergency on her hands. She saw two students kiss. That's right, the assistant principal, Margaret Ann Herring, glanced out her window and saw one little girl walk over to a little boy and kiss him. An appalled Herring immediately called child welfare officials, who, rather than telling her she was overreaching, directed her to call the sheriff, which she did. The kissing police arrived on the scene, found no evidence of sexual abuse or anything like that, thus closing the case on a complete waste of time. At really, nine-year-olds? And the very, very ugly Megyn Kelly and Bill O'Reilly. Last night on Fox So-Called News, the two talking heads tried to downplay the now infamous pepper spraying incident at UC Davis last week, with Kelly saying, well, here's what she said.
I mean, it's like a derivative of actual pepper. It's a food product, essentially.
Right. The cops just should have used other food products, right? Maybe mustard, whipped cream, to disperse the demonstrators? Yeah, just pie them in the face. And O'Reilly chimed in, saying the pepper spray was likely diluted because those sprays should have had more of a reaction than that. I guess O'Reilly wants to see the Occupy Patriots writhing in pain. Is there no end to the links Fox so-called news will go to defend police brutality and downplay the 99% movement? On the other hand, what else would you expect from GOP TV? That's very, very ugly. 866-987-THOM, our telephone number. And Matthew in Ohio. Hey, Matthew, what's up?
The last time we had a protest that stopped something was Vietnam, and that took years. Do you think the level of intensity of the Occupy movement is going to shorten the length of time it's going to take to turn this mess around?
I do, actually, and I think that there's two reasons that are driving that. One is that technology and communications are much faster than they were back in the 60s, and secondly, that the economic crisis is being felt by all of America, and the Vietnam War was principally being felt by college students who were facing the draft. So there's a much larger base, and communication is much faster. So, yeah, I think that this is going to resolve more rapidly. And I think that if you're looking for a good analogy to the Occupy movement, it's the Bonus Army. Back in 1932, people who occupied the land between the White House and the Potomac River, 45,000 people, and President Hoover, Herbert Hoover, ordered Douglas MacArthur and 8 tanks and a whole bunch of officers to ride through there and burn them out, and they did. And that, I think, set the stage for Franklin Roosevelt's presidency. And I think this is setting the stage for something also, something quite extraordinary. Steve in Little Rock, Arkansas. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, I was just wanting to touch. I'm a nurse in Little Rock. My wife, she's a police detective, mm-hmm. and we love your show. Mm-hmm. And Free Speech TV. The only thing that I worry about is my wife. She's a good cop. She changes people's lives daily. The small number of cops today that step out of line give all cops a bad name, I think.
I agree.
I know we can't suppress what's being done wrong by cops, but I'd like to see equally what's being done right.
Yeah. The point that I've made, and I don't know, Steve, if you've been watching or listening to the show long enough to have heard me make it over and over again, as a graduate of the Georgia Police Academy, but that was not because I wanted to be a police officer. I was a licensed private detective for a couple of years in Georgia, but that was because I was writing books about it and about them. I was, I've been there. I've been through the training. I've known a lot of these people, and I know that there is a small percentage, and you know that there's a small percentage of people who are there because, you know, give them a club and a badge and the legal right to whack somebody upside the head and they'd be there for $15,000 a year. On the other hand, there is a very large majority of police people who in the police departments who are there because they want to serve and protect their communities. And what I've been saying for years and years is when the day comes that we pay our teachers and our police officers the way that we pay our doctors, then you will see our society become very civil and very, you know, and very fast. I think that that's just, you know, we need to have that level of respect and demand that level of accountability, as it were, from those professions. Because after all, it's our teachers have our future in their hands, our kids, and our police officers have our present, our safety in their hands, and our doctors have our safety in their hands. And, you know, why we differentiate, you know, why we have doctors who are making $1 million a year and we have cops who literally have to work a second job in order to make, you know, in order to pay the mortgage is just way beyond me. And the same with teachers. So I hope I'm making sense to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. You're welcome. Thank you for the call. And thank your wife for being one of the good ones for serving her community there in Little Rock, Arkansas. Because there are a lot of good cops out there, and I know some of them. J.D. in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, J.D., what's up?
Hey, Tom. You know, I want to point out my belief that this event in Santa Clara, you see Santa Clara?
Yep.
Was the perfect example of nonviolent civil disobedience. What it did is, in my opinion, it was...
Wait a second. You're not talking about UC Davis?
I'm talking about the pepper spray.
Yeah, okay. That was at the University of California campus in the city of Davis.
Oh, okay.
Not Santa Clara. Yeah. Okay.
Meyer.
No problem.
I thought it was at Santa Clara, UC Santa Clara.
No, UC Davis.
No. Okay. Anyway, I think it was the perfect example of nonviolent civil disobedience and that the general populace will be turned away from authoritarianism towards a populist movement.
I agree.
As a result. But contrarily, when you have what are perceived to be unruly crowds, vandalism, aggression, it has the opposite effect.
Yep.
It turns the general populace away from populist movements.
I agree. And that's why early on in the Oakland movement, when there was that group of people, young people who were smashing windows, I came on the air. Joshua Holland was on with me. Saying, please don't do that. You know, we need to condemn that. We need to stop that. There isn't a space for that because that is what, frankly, led to the election of Richard Nixon in 1968. Was the violence arguably the police riot in the Democratic Convention in Chicago in '68, but there was other violence associated with it at that time. And Nixon called out the silent majority, and the silent majority said, "Yeah, okay, we'll put you in the White House. We can't." Allow this movement. We can't, as if I have any power on this, or you or I, JD, have any say in it. But you know, let us all hope and pray that this movement stays nonviolent, and the power, the incredible moral and political and cultural power of passive nonviolence in the face of brutality, is is held up and maintained. I think people are getting it, how powerful this is. J.D., thanks for the call. You nailed it. You just absolutely nailed it. Tony in Naperville, Illinois. Hey, Tony, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How you doing? I wanted to talk to you, hopefully concisely, about the Citizens United ruling and home rule. Is there a way that we can get local and state governments or regulators to regulate political advertising or political spending without any kind of transparency? I mean, we're not going to be able to, it doesn't seem like it's possible to get done on a federal level.
Yeah.
Is there a way we can start doing it so that I don't have to see an ad that isn't transparent?
Right, or an ad that's filled with lies and you have no idea who paid for it, in other words.
Correct, yeah. Correct.
Here's the problem. The Supreme Court has ruled that the First Amendment protects that ad and protects the anonymous people who are putting that ad up, particularly if they are a corporation or a very wealthy individual. And that's not my read of the Constitution. That's not the read of 4 out of the 9 justices of the Constitution, but it was the read of the right-wing 5 in the justices of the Constitution.
Right.
And frankly, my read of the Constitution says that the Supreme Court does not even have the power to rule on the constitutionality of laws. And they basically didn't at the beginning of this republic. But that's a whole nother rant. But in terms of the ability to, at a local level, do something that the United States Supreme Court has determined at a federal level is unconstitutional, unfortunately, to the best of my knowledge, you don't have that power. However, that said, check out Tom Lindsay's work. He's with the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, CELDF.org is their website, CELDF, because they actually are working with local communities to try and turn this stuff back. We had him as a guest a while ago. Check it out. Thank you, Tony.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Next up, your calls and the Twilight Zone alert. Someone's having problems with a touchy-feely poltergeist.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Exposing the con and conservative. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Ooh, our Twilight Zone alert. Not exactly Casper the Ghost. A 73-year-old British woman is having a problem with a touchy-feely poltergeist. Doris Birch claims she can't sleep because a ghost gropes her every night while she's lying in bed. As she told a UK website, it's like an octopus. It started 4 months ago. I was laying in bed when I felt this creepy pair of hands. Birch claims she's afraid to tell others about the groping ghost because they would think that she's crazy. But according to paranormal researcher Alejandro Rojas, stories of women being groped by ghosts are fairly common. So either Birch is being haunted by the ghost of Herman Cain, or by a TSA agent stuck in the netherworld. Ba-dum-bump. There you go. Thank you, Jacob. Mark in Seattle, a journalist in Seattle, you have an update for us on what's going on with Occupy Seattle.
Yes, Tom, it's Mark Taylor Canfield reporting from Seattle.
Hey,
and let me tell you, they're keeping me busy. You know, I thought when I joined this occupation that I wouldn't get any more work as a journalist, but now I've got a blog on Daily Cause and Huffington Post, and everybody wants to know what's happening in Seattle.
Yep.
This latest incident is an example, and I'm really disappointed. My heart goes out to Jennifer because she's a friend of mine, and I was there at that incident that
day. If I may interrupt you, for those people who just tuned in, what Mark is talking about is that Jennifer Fox, a 19-year-old woman, 3 months pregnant, she was trying to leave when the police attacked the encampment. She was shouting to them, according to her story, anyway, this is her side of the story. She was shouting to them, I am 3 months pregnant. Please let me get out of here. And instead, two different police officers, one punched her in the stomach, another hit her in the stomach with the wheel of a bicycle, and another pepper sprayed her to the point that she fell to the ground and was blinded and had to be taken to the hospital. And she has since miscarried and lost the baby that she was going to have that she was going to name Miracle. So back to you, Mark.
Yeah,
is that story, to the best of your knowledge, by the way, accurate the way I just told it?
As far as I can tell at this point, yes, it is, Tom. And it's also the same incident where Dorley Rainey, the 84-year-old woman, was pepper sprayed. And I want to report on that, too. On Saturday, we had to take her to the emergency room because she was having problems with her lungs. And we're talking about an 84-year-old woman here, so I'm very concerned about her.
Yes.
But, you know, we took this issue directly to the Office of Professional Accountability, which is our civilian police review board here in Seattle, which has been accused of being largely ineffective. I also want to remind the audience that the Seattle Police Department is currently under a Department of Justice investigation for racial profiling and the excessive use of force. So there have been problems here, and we've been dealing with them for a long time, ever since our Chief Kurlikowski left and became the national drug czar. There have been a lot of issues here, and I've been at a lot of protests and witnessed a lot of aggressive behavior by police that I found inappropriate and somewhat violent. So I have to say that, you know, these incidences are a terrible tragedy in Seattle. I'm really saddened by it. We went directly to the Office of Professional Accountability. Jennifer was there along with Dorley and filed complaints with the police department. We demanded to speak to the police captain and to some of the officers. And Rich Lang, one of the priests who was actually pepper sprayed, delivered a long tirade against the police and, you know, tried to encourage them to respect human rights. And our whole attitude during that meeting with the police was to say to them that we have been nonviolent. Yes, we know there are bad apples on both sides. There's bad apples everywhere. But we have been nonviolent, and there's no reason for the police to use what I call this extrajudicial punishment against protesters. The point is that the courts are supposed to decide on guilt or innocence of protesters and the punishment to be meted out, not the police. And we really want to stop them from around the country from using these kinds of tactics against nonviolent protesters.
Yeah. You know what I find fascinating, Mark, if I may interject, is that when pepper spray and tasers were introduced into the normal armament of police officers over the last 20 years or so, the rationale was that this would cut down on police shootings. In other words, when a police officer felt sufficiently threatened that they couldn't just handcuff somebody and drag them off, but they had to do something, and these were non-lethal forms of violence, frankly, but non-lethal. And what has happened is that instead of shooting, they're using these instead of handcuffing. It used to be that protesters would be handcuffed and put in the paddy wagon and taken into the police station. And now they're being tortured. They're being subject to chemical weaponry, and then they're being taken into the police station. And this seems to me totally inappropriate.
You know, I noticed that same kind of activity during the anti-WTO protests that happened here, which I was also at.
This is nothing new.
You know, there was a real move to create a sort of a paramilitary force, and that's when a lot of the riot gear and these mobile tank units and all these things started appearing. And I think, you know, it's probably been good business for defense contractors or whoever's selling all these, you know, chemical weapons, but I don't think that it's good for society in general. And we have this thing called the Posse Comitatus Act in the United States, which is supposed to be...
We don't have it any longer.
It was
repealed 3 years ago during the Bush administration in one of the omnibus budget bills. It was passed in the 1870s. It said that never again, following the Civil War, never again will the federal government turn its guns on its own citizens on U.S. soil. And it was repealed during the Bush administration, which is mind-boggling.
Well, in this case, we seem to have police that are acting that way. And what's sad is that the people who are ordering this activity usually are sitting somewhere in an office somewhere high up in an ivory tower and aren't hearing from the demonstrators. So what we're encouraging people to do is take it directly to the mayor, take it directly to the city council, where, you know, who's actually endorsed us here in Seattle, and take it to the police department and say, we're not going to tolerate this anymore. It's been going on for people of color and minorities for years and years and years. Now we have protesters that are getting publicity.
Put an end to it for everybody. Mark, I'm sorry to cut you off, but we're out of time. Thank you very much for the report. Mark Taylor Canfield in Seattle, a reporter in Seattle. Coming up tomorrow, Brave New Foundations, Who Are the 1% campaign? Robert Greenwald will be with us. But also, a special edition of Brunch with Bernie, our first hour, Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. Occupy something. I'll see you tomorrow. We'll
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.